Good day, and welcome to Detroit Today on 101.9 WDET. I'm your host, Stephen Henderson, and I'm really glad you've joined us today. Last week, a 7.8 magnitude earthquake struck southern Turkey and northern Syria, flattening multiple city blocks. Notably, this earthquake had an unusually large 7.4 magnitude aftershock. And the combination of those two sent a region which is already dealing with a significant refugee crisis into much further turmoil. To date, the death toll in these two countries has surpassed 40,000 people between the two countries. I'm going to say that again. 40,000 people lost their lives in the wake of this earthquake. Thousands of buildings, of course, were destroyed as well, and that leaves hundreds of thousands of people without shelter at a time of year where temperatures often dip below freezing. It is winter there as it is here. This is a devastating tragedy that also has really local implications. Over the past decade, Michigan has had one of the highest Syrian refugee populations in the United States. These deep ties with the region follow more than a decade of civil war in Syria, where in March of 2011, pro-democracy demonstrations erupted in the country against President Bashar al-Assad, who launched a crackdown to crush the dissent of what he called foreign-backed terrorism. The unfortunate tragedy of the earthquake and the response has highlighted a lot of the difficulties that people face in that region. A high concentration of old buildings in both countries, as well as possible corruption and lack of oversight in new constructions, all of these things may have contributed to the high loss of life. Meanwhile, instability in the region complicates efforts to get aid and assistance to people who desperately need it right now. And still, communities grieve about the unthinkable loss of life here, with concerns for those whose lives are left in shambles and concern for how to best help those who need it the most right now. A little later in the show, we're going to talk with a couple of Michiganders who have ties to Islamic communities in Turkey and in Syria to learn about what's happening with folks in the area, how it's affecting us here in Michigan, and the efforts to assist people in those countries as they try to recover from this tragedy. But first today, we're joined by Ishan Tharoor, who is a columnist on the Foreign Desk at the Washington Post. He's going to catch us up on where we are in the aftermath of this unthinkable earthquake. Ishan Tharoor, welcome to Detroit Today.
Thanks for having me. Good to be with you.
So tell us what the latest we know is from Syria and Turkey. It seems every time I go back and look at cable news, the numbers are bigger and worse than they were before.
Yeah, the death toll, as you said, is quite staggering. This is in Turkey's modern history, the worst earthquake the region has seen. And this is something that, you know, had it hit anywhere in the world, we'd be talking about a significant loss of life and great suffering. But it's particularly intensified in a region where, as you said there's a lot of shoddy construction codes on the Turkish side. There's all sorts of inquiries now happening over the extent to which these cities that have existed on a very well-known fault line and set of fault lines, really, where they just weren't earthquake ready, or they were not given the necessary funds, or those funds were diverted for other purposes. It's been unfortunately very politicized, and probably necessarily politicized. And then, of course, on the other side of the border in Syria, the earthquake hit areas that are controlled by the regime, and the earthquake hit areas that are not controlled by the regime. In northwest Syria, you have essentially what is the last pocket of the rebellion in Idlib province. Over the last basically half a decade, Idlib province has been at the whim of the Assad regime in Syria, where it basically, through the UN and through the UN's acquiescence, has really weaponized flows of aid into that region. There are millions of people who live there who are displaced from the war. And so if you think about the kind of double or triple calamity suffered by these communities. You know, they've gone through hell over the last 10 years. They've gone through conflict, displacement, constant Russian bombing campaigns. And then now you have this, where you've seen whole towns in parts of Syria and northern Syria leveled, and they hadn't, they didn't receive any help for days. And so you have these horrifying stories of communities and families trying to dig out their relatives with their bare hands because there was no equipment, none of the necessary equipment you need to do that. And so while Turkey, you know, at this point, we don't expect the numbers to rise that much more in Turkey, the numbers could rise significantly in Syria still. And that's testament to just how benighted and troubled this region is.
Yes. So I want to spend a little bit of time talking about the two countries that are involved here. They are very different in the way that they operate and in the way that they might have been prepared for this. You know, Turkey is a parliamentary republic, a democracy of a kind in the region, and I think is thought of as a functioning democracy, a kind of place where, you know, where standards and codes can be, you know, documented and upheld and enforced. And Syria is, of course, a very different nation. You know, it's a dictatorship, really, and it is well known for government dysfunction. Looking at the pictures and the video coming from the region, it doesn't seem as though there is much difference between what happened in one country and what happened in another. I mean, the devastation seems to be equal. And so I think one of the questions is whether whether the difference in kind of the functions of government in the two countries didn't matter because the earthquake was so strong, or whether there aren't as many significant differences in the way that the governments function in those countries, and that both may have been leaving their populations in a really precarious position. I guess I don't know the answer, which one is true, or whether it's a mix of them.
I mean, I think you know, there are, especially when you're watching on TV, it does seem all quite equal. You know, the rubble is rubble wherever you look at it. Desperation and suffering is the same. And to that extent, you could say the earthquake is a great leveler, which is a hideous pun. But I think there are some key differences. You know, Erdogan, Recep Tayyip Erdogan, the Turkish president, who, of course, many people see as, his critics see as a would-be autocrat and dictator as well. He is facing a major election in June. Well, we think they're going to hold elections in June. We don't know if he may invoke emergency reasons to postpone these elections. He was on the ground in earthquake-hit areas immediately, very quickly. He is has mobilized a considerable national response. He has, of course, welcomed international help. And you know, you have tens of thousands of public and private groups, agencies pouring in relief work and efforts through the region. And of course, you know, parts of Turkey are probably the worst hit. You know, there's certain cities in Turkey that have been, that were really much closer to the epicenter than parts of Syria. And so the damage in Turkey is astonishing, partially because it was closer to the epicenter of these quakes. In Syria, you have Syrian President Bashar al-Assad. He really dragged his feet. It took a whole more than a week for him to say, okay, fine, we give you the UN permission to come across the border with Turkey at various checkpoints with more aid for these rebel-held areas. It took him more than a week to allow that to happen. And so while he can say, look, I'm making this gesture to these rebels, you know, by the time a lot of aid comes to these parts of the country, people have already died, and they've been trapped in the rubble for days. He has now, for the first time, he can do photo shoots in front of devastation in his country, and it's not the result of his own bombing. And so he's gone around to Aleppo and some other places, cities that his regime pummeled during the civil war, and is casting himself as as, you know, somebody who's coming to save the day. And I do think that there is a lot of reasons to be cynical about the way he's posturing right now. Mm. There are a lot of critics of the Assad regime who think that here is a moment where the Syrian regime, that it can exploit it to further kind of bring itself out from the cold. Of course, it's been, you know, shunned by much of the international community, even from many of its Arab neighbors for the last decade. And that is now changing. And that has, there's been a slow process of that normalization happening. And this tragedy may accelerate that process. And so critics of the regime are very worried about that. I would say that, what we're seeing on the Turkish side is horrendous. But it is also going to shadow Turkey's very complicated politics in the months to come. Turkey is a democracy, but it's a very troubled democracy. It's one where Erdogan has basically been in power for two decades, by hook or by crook at this point. He has bent the electoral and political system to his will. He's changed from a parliamentary system to a presidential system. He's, constantly playing politics in terms of, weaponizing what he can in his party's favor to maintain his majority. And now you have him and his supporters saying, oh, you guys should stop playing politics. We're in the middle of a disaster. But there is a very loud political debate happening in Turkey over why so many people died. And part of Erdogan's legacy of the last 20 years is he presided over a huge and, to a certain extent, kind of frenzied construction boom across the country. Mm-hmm. And now it does seem quite clear that in many cases, especially in this part of southern Turkey, a lot of recent constructions were not done in the proper ways and not done according to code. And that is probably, that raises questions about corruption, around shoddy governance, and around a culture of that surrounded the construction industry that sort of assumed that because the president wants, booming cities and big projects, we can cut corners. And so there is an obvious political dimension to this that cannot be ignored.
Yeah, yeah. I'm talking about the massive earthquake in Syria and Turkey last week, the unbelievable loss of life, the extensive damage that was done to cities in both Turkey and in Syria. Our guest right now is Ishan Tharoor. He's a columnist on the Foreign Desk at the Washington Post. He writes the Today's Worldview newsletter and column. He has been writing about what has happened in these two countries and what will happen as relief efforts really ramp up. We want to hear from you as well during this conversation. Give us a call and let us know what you're thinking about the devastation that people are experiencing in Turkey or Syria. Of course, this is a part of the world with pretty close ties to Syria. Lots of people here have family there. Either they came here or maybe your parents or your grandparents came here from Syria. Lots of Syrian refugees also here in Southeast Michigan. Let us know how you're communicating with family or friends you might have living in Syria or in Turkey. What can you tell us about what's happening with them? Are they thinking about leaving? Are they trying to leave? What do you make of the absolutely really mind-blowing video and pictures out of the region of the devastation from this earthquake? As always, the number here on the phones is 313-577-1019. That's 313-577-1019. You can also go to Twitter and hashtag Detroit Today, and we can include your comments in the program that way. Ishan, before we get to our listeners, I want to talk a little about the U.S. response to this disaster. That's also, of course, caught up in a little bit of politics and, of course, uncertainty inspired by the politics in the region. Where are we with the U.S. role in the relief effort?
Well, obviously, the U.S., like a lot of other Western governments, are sent rescue teams. It's sent a considerable amount of aid. the important thing that happened last week was that the U.S. Moved to relax certain controls of regarding its sanctions on Syria, right? So right now there's significant U.S. sanctions on Syria, on the Assad regime, but it created a mechanism by which transactions related to earthquake relief receive a kind of humanitarian waiver, and that's a pretty big deal. The U.S. doing that allows for more aid to directly go into Syria. It kind of had a corollary effect where it strengthened the Syrian currency, the Syrian pound. So that was a pretty important move. There are plenty of analysts here in D.C. who are worried about this increased flow of aid coming into the country that may get siphoned off by the Assad regime in ways that are not, and diverted from communities that actually need this relief. So there are concerns about that too. And that is probably the bigger question is, how do we reckon with this regime in Syria, which has brutalized especially the population in northwest Syria? And what leverage do we have over it? And at this point, the importance is, relief. The importance is a humanitarian one. It's a concern that we all share for people there who are enduring a pretty hideous tragedy. But at the same time, the Assad regime is the Assad regime, and it's been, it's more or less consolidated its position and is strengthening itself in this moment.
Yeah. Okay, we're going to take a quick break. I want to thank Ishan Tharoor of The Washington Post for being here with us to give us a sense of the overall picture in Syria and Turkey. It was really great to have you here. When we come back, we are going to talk with Dr. Emjad Ross, who is president of the Syrian American Medical Society, a global medical relief organization that's working on the front lines of crisis in Syria. We're going to turn the lens more locally as well and talk about the ties that we have in Southeast Michigan to this region. We want to continue to hear from you on the phones and on social. Give us a call. Let us know what you make of the earthquake in Turkey and Syria. Let us know if you're someone who comes from that region or has family still in that region. What are you making of their fate right now? What do you know about what they are enduring as the relief efforts get going? 313-577-1019 is the number here on the phones. That's 313-577-1019. You can also go to Twitter and hashtag Detroit Today. We'll include you that way. We'll be right back with more Detroit Today.
Bringing you news that matters.
Stories that impact your life.
Music from the Motor City and around the world.
This is 101.9 WDET.
Detroit's NPR station.
This is Detroit Today on 101.9 WDET. I'm Stephen Henderson, and I'm glad you've joined us. As I mentioned earlier, Michigan has one of the largest Syrian refugee populations in our country, as well as a large Islamic population that is directly affected by the earthquake in Turkey and Syria, has led many from our area to go to the region in an effort to assist the recovery, including our next guest, who has spent time on the ground in Syria. Amjad Ross is the president of the Syrian American Medical Society, which is a global medical relief organization working on the front lines of crisis relief in Syria. Dr. Ross, welcome to Detroit Today.
Good morning. Thank you for having me this morning.
Thanks for joining us. So let's talk about you going to Syria after the earthquake. Tell us what the situation on the ground looks like in person.
It's beyond imagination. Our organization have dealt with many disasters in Syria, from chemical attacks to massive military operation that resulted in destruction of areas, villages, and towns. But this is beyond what we've seen. And it's people are on the streets talking about the area. I mean, in northwest Syria. So Syrians are on the street looking for shelter, destroyed buildings in many, many towns. And Some are digging for their loved ones from under rubbles, and first responders trying to keep up with the demands. Medical teams are everywhere, in all hospitals, on the street, and ambulances trying to save lives. And what I witnessed was still like 3 days after the disaster, after the earthquake, when I was able to get in, travel from Detroit all the way and get in. It is really something I wish I never saw in my life.
Wow. Wow. Can you talk about your own ties to the region and what brings you to the work that you're trying to do there?
Well, I was born and raised in Syria, in the city of Hama. In my young age, I witnessed the massacres of Hama, 1982. Mm-hmm. And I finished my medical school, came to Michigan in 1991, and did my training at Michigan State, and moved on to Ohio, came back. I mean, when the conflict erupted in Syria, we activated the humanitarian charity arm of the organization that is the Syrian American Medical Society, SAMS, and we started delivering medical aids to Syrians where we are allowed to work, and this is a very important term. From that point on, late 2011, we grew to from just like tens of thousands of dollars to $40 million a year organization with large membership, large support, large base of supporters, and a lot of beneficiaries. I'm not remarketing my organization here, but just to answer your question, we are the leader of healthcare in Northwest Syria. We deliver 6,000 medical service a day in Northwest Syria alone. And we also work in other areas like Turkey, Iraq, Jordan, Lebanon, Greece, and we respond to some of the other disasters as it comes. But really, our focus more Syria and surrounding areas. Yeah, so a lot of us are volunteers, including myself. This is not a career for me; it's a passion.
So I'm curious about whether you have family who are still in the region, and what you're hearing or seeing from them about the effects of this.
Yeah, my family are not in the Northwest Syria. They have been affected in a way. The area where they live was affected by the earthquake. Mm-hmm. I have a lot of friends in Northwest Syria, and it's not only Northwest. I mean, I keep using the term because we work there, but it's also other cities like Aleppo, Hama, Latakia. We've seen death in those big cities. But as you go north, the more north you go, the more destruction and the more dead you see. Yeah. So yes, and Turkey is even another story. The area like the city of Hatay and Gaziantep and Marash and many other Salihiyah and other cities. It's beyond describable.
Yeah. I'm talking with Dr. Amjad Ras. He is the president of the Syrian American Medical Society, which is a global medical relief organization working on the front lines of crisis relief in Syria. We're talking about the earthquake that struck Syria and Turkey last week, the unbelievable devastation and loss of life that was caused by that earthquake. Dr. Ras is among the people who have gone to the region to try to help with relief efforts. We'd love to hear from you during the conversation as well. This is, of course, a region that has deep ties to Syria in particular, but give us a call and let us know. Do you have family or friends who live in Syria or in Turkey who have been affected by this earthquake. What stories can you share about what's happening in the region, and how is it affecting you here in Michigan? What do you wish people knew, maybe, about this tragedy that's not evident from the news coverage that we've all been pretty riveted to for the past week? The number here on the phones is 313-577-1019. That's 313-577-1019. You can also go to Twitter and hashtag Detroit Today, and we can include you in the conversation that way. Dr. Ross, I want to talk about the regime of Bashar al-Assad and how it is affecting the relief efforts. Do you have confidence that that relief can get through to the people who need it, given the complications of the region?
Relief will get through. When there's a desire, when there's a will, there's a way. Okay, but there have been certainly a lot of delays, and for many reasons. One of them is the very limited border crossing coming from Turkey. This area is in a way in partial besiegement due to the whatever development of on the ground. But so the only access to outside help would be through Turkey, and politicization of aid had been the highlight from the get-go, from the beginning of this. So the UN aid delivery is down to one border crossing, that's Bab al-Hawa, and the area in that and there was heavily hit, infected by the earthquake. So the only lifeline at the time, this is when the earthquake happened, was not a lifeline. The people who used to help us in southern Turkey needed help. But, and we could not get any other aid. So the delay in opening the borders and other border crossing had caused the delays in rescue and operations and loss of lives. Interestingly, the government in Damascus had agreed to open two more border crossing. We did not need the approval from Damascus to open border crossing. Mm-hmm. This is under the emergency humanitarian mandate. Okay, so just imagine if something similar happened in Ukraine, and you have to go to Moscow to approve delivery of aid to Ukrainians. It's a very similar scenario what happened 2 days ago. So yes, it is all about politicization of AIDS, and it's all about the Russia and the veto power in the UN Security Council. Mm-hmm. We have produced some legal documents using a reputable law firm in London, where we clearly showed that we do not, humanitarian aid delivery can be delivered and has been in the past without approval from the UN Security Council. But again, It's the influence of some of the countries like Russia on the mandate and on the UN operations.
Sure. 313-577-1019 is the number here. Let's start with Bernadette in Old Redford. Bernadette, welcome to the show.
Good morning, Stephen. I want to ask, what is the best direct way that we can benefit the affected individuals? Because my concern is that a lot of money, like even the Red Cross, the chief executives get big salaries, but the money doesn't go where it should. In addition to that, I want to mention that although we want to be helpful, having money is more practical than sending goods because of the logistics involved in shipping those goods. Hmm. So those are my thoughts.
Yeah, Bernadette, I really appreciate the call and the questions and the information. Dr. Ross, address what Bernadette's saying here about how people in this country, if they want to help, should choose to help to make sure that help gets to the people.
Thank you, Bernadette, for this great question. Really, I admire the passion you have and many other Americans have to help. We've been getting all kind of inquiries and all kind of supports. It is beyond what we expected. But this is a great country with great people. I would suggest you look for the organization present on the ground, and there are so many of them that are registered here in the U.S. SAMS, Syrian American Medical Society, is one of them. I'm not here to market our organization, but I'm here to help to have the voice of the people inside Syria being heard here. There are a lot of media outlets, academic centers, and humanitarian bodies have put out list of trusted organizations that you can donate to directly. SAMS is what we've had now with those lists. SAMS are either number one or number two, but we're not the only ones. So I suggest you do the search. And Syrian Forum is another one, also American registered organization, many others. They do great job on the ground, and we have partners with Syrian Forum to deliver some of the aid that we cannot deliver, like shelter, food, and non-food items.
Yeah. Bernadette, really, again, appreciate the call and the questions, and of course your willingness to try to figure out how we as people in this country can help in this enormous crisis in that region. Let's go next to Lee in Detroit. Lee, welcome to the show.
Hi, thank you. So I own a local bra store, and when I put out the need about what's going on in Turkey, because one of our employees is from Turkey, and she did lose three of her family members in one of the apartment building disasters. Yeah, disaster. Some people did get out because they didn't go back in the building, but they went to an aunt's house that was a safety home, really, for everyone. So they did contact me and said, we need underwear, which I specialize in, so I contacted my vendors. They said we can get hundreds of pairs of underwear. And then we contacted other vendors who said they can bring camis, they can get under silks, whatever they need to keep warm. And since they're shipping it from Europe, we got the address for my friend's aunt. And we're sending it directly. One of the things they said was a lot of the aid was getting left out in the rain because nobody knew where to deliver it, and it was getting ruined. So what I can say is if you can find someplace local, you know, you can get an address, you can find someone who's traveling there to get aid directly to people, and check a lot of these aid organizations because some of them aren't real, which is sad, really sad.
Yeah. Lee, really appreciate you calling in and sharing that info. And of course, your shop, Busted, is one of the more familiar retail places here in the city of Detroit. And you're doing great stuff, giving people opportunity in the different retail locations that you have. I really appreciate you calling. Though, Dr. Ross, I want to have you respond to what Lee's saying about, again, how to give and how to be really particular about giving.
Actually, to give to the people inside Turkey, there are a lot of venues. And I suggest you call the embassy in Washington. They have a hotline for this. And they collect containers, they ship them. The other thing is, if anybody is traveling on Turkish Airlines, and he or she wants to take more, like in terms of aid, Turkish Airlines are not charging for extra bag. We have one traveler, he's inside Syria now, traveled with 13 big bags on Turkish Airlines. They charge him nothing. So a lot of those, we talk about gift in kind items. So a lot of organizations are reputable organizations. Not everybody is fake just after money, but for Turkey, I suggest calling the if you don't have any other means, calling the Turkish embassy in I wish I have the number in Washington. They have like supply chain going all the way there. We are collecting for medical items, and we take some brand new humanitarian items. We are taking used clothes. We have containers going to Syria. We already delivered two shipments inside Syria. Came from Europe, actually. A lot of things going on, and the need is even bigger than what anybody can imagine. And please, a lot of data on the internet, a lot of help on the internet. Do the search. Make sure the organization is credible. Make sure they have presence on the ground, and see and make your own judgment. Really, you want the aid to go to the right hands and through the right hands.
Yes. Yes. Okay, Dr. Amjad Ross, it was really great to have you here with us to talk about relief efforts in Syria. Of course, we are grateful to you and your organization for what you're doing in the region. Thanks so much for joining us here, though.
Thank you. Thank you for having me. Thank you.
When we come back, we are going to continue talking about this and be joined by a Dearborn resident who is also working on relief efforts in Syria. We'll also continue to hear from you on the phones and on social. 313-577-1019 is the number here. Call and tell us if you have ties to Turkey or to Syria. What are you hearing from the folks you have ties to there about the aftermath of this massive earthquake and the relief efforts? We'll be right back with more Detroit Today. This is Detroit Today on 101.9 WDET. I'm your host, Stephen Henderson, and I'm glad you've joined to continue our look into the aftermath of the earthquake in Turkey and Syria and how it's affecting not only that region, but also this region, because we have so many people here who have ties to Syria in particular. We're now joined by Abdurrahman Aldahan, who works with Mercy USA, which is another relief organization that is really working to try to figure out how to get aid to folks who are affected by the earthquake. Abdurrahman, welcome to Detroit Today.
Well, thank you for having me.
Yeah. So let's talk about your ties to the region and how things are affecting you and your family and friends.
Yeah. First of all, I would like to say that this is a massive earthquake that has affected a lot of people, whether just the earthquake itself on the ground or because of family and friends. And I have both. And I also have staff that are on the ground. So our organization, Mercy USA, has actually been in the region since 2011 in Turkey, in Antakya, Turkey, to be precise. We have around 40 staff members that have all been affected. This is besides family I'm speaking right now. Mm-hmm. Those 40 staff members all lost their homes. Many of them are still looking for places to stay. Some of them have moved all around Turkey to try to get situated with family and friends. I have three staff members that lost their lives in Turkey and one in Syria. This is besides my own family there that we were able to, thankfully, after 2 days of being stranded in the parks, we were able to get to them and get them out. We have missing family, and it's just tragic. The words cannot describe what these people have went through and continue to go through, especially the Syrians that are in Turkey internally displaced inside Syria, because they went from tragedy to tragedy. So on the ground, the situation is horrible. So this is what my tie is to the region and how the earthquake is affecting me personally and the people themselves.
Mm-hmm. So what do you feel like people here in Michigan who want to help, with the aid and relief should know about what's going on there, and maybe something that they might not know about how to do that and how to make sure that what they're doing is actually reaching the people who need it?
So the issue right now is a lot of organizations have popped up that are raising funds and trying to help with the effort. The issue is with that is a lot of these organizations, sorry to say this, don't really have a presence on the ground. While we and other organizations that have been personally affected on the ground, we have 600 staff inside Syria, and they have all been affected. And despite all of that, these staff are still working. So when we have organizations that are coming and taking away from the efforts that we can focus on while being on the ground, it makes a horrible situation worse. So I would say for everyone to look into the organizations that you're donating to. And I could say that since we have been on the ground since 2011 and our offices in Syria have been running since 2012 and we are major in the region. We work with the UNHCR, with BHA, with WFP, along our own programs, and we reach thousands of people, if not, you know, hundreds of thousands of people inside Syria. Mm-hmm. Inside Turkey, we are working right now coordinating with the government and seeing how we can be more effective. We are currently distributing ready-to-eat meals. We are distributing blankets, and we're working on figuring out what next, as we assess the situation, what next possible delivery we can do to help the people that are affected and that are in need.
Again, 313-577-1019 is the number here on the phones. Let's go to Anthony in Southwest Detroit. Anthony, welcome to the show.
Oh, thank you. Good morning, Stephen. Mm-hmm. I understand that our country, the U.S., has a lot of sanctions placed on Syria, and I just think it could be helpful if we lifted those sanctions as a country.
Yeah. You know, that's not something that I've heard a lot of people suggest, Anthony, but it's an interesting suggestion. Abdul Rahman, can you talk a little about the effect of sanctions on Syria, on getting relief to people, and again, the overall relationship between the U.S. and Syria, which has something to do with all of this stuff and the effectiveness of efforts like yours?
Yeah, so I, as a humanitarian aid worker, it's difficult for me to speak on the political aspect of this. But what I can do tell you is that the government of the Assad regime does not work directly in northern Syria, and that the northern Syria part, the relief effort that is going there is going through Turkey. And it took a while for the border because the devastation was so strong that the Turkish regime was very busy with their own devastation, that it took a while for aid to start coming through. But the organizations that were already on the ground and had warehouses in place already distributing were working hard to continue doing that. In the areas that the Assad regime is working, that is something I'd rather not touch on, because it's very political and it can cause a lot of hate between people, and it's something I'd rather not touch on as a humanitarian worker.
Yeah. Can you give us a sense of what you think over the next few weeks or months will be some of the needs in this area? Obviously right now it's really just about immediate relief for folks, but so many people have lost their homes. So many people live in cities that are just not going to be able to rebuild quickly, if at all. What are some of the things that we should start thinking about that people will need?
So I was in touch with our team, and I asked them that same question. What do you want the people in the U.S. to know in preparation for this interview? And I was told by them to remind everyone that this is a ripple effect. Yes, people right now are very motivated to donate because of what they're seeing. But after a while, the media is going to stop focusing on it. And the ripple effect that is caused by this devastation will not go away for years. If you can think about the thousands of lives that have been lost, you can think about businesses and livelihoods that have that are gone, people who are in debt because they bought products and in hopes of, like, for example, selling, and if you can think about they have no products left, or you can think about a person who was the breadwinner of the family and that person passed away, and right now that family is essentially left with nothing. After a while, those funds that people are donating there will dry out, and these people are left with nothing. So to put it in perspective, it's very hard to imagine the situation that people are in and that will continue to be in for years to come. So the request from in the field was, please do not forget that these are real people, and behind every death is a family, and behind every family is a story, and behind every story is years of devastations that will continue to ripple through.
So I also wonder what you make of this region and its ties to Syria. The number of people who have chosen to leave Syria or were driven out of Syria who come here, should we be prepared for more folks to want to come to our region? And what should we do to prepare for that?
So, yes, in the last few years, since 2012, there has been an influx of Syrian refugees in this region. They have thankfully been able to rebuild their lives, and to think that many people who were not able to leave, that built their lives inside Syria or inside Turkey elsewhere, and then they had to leave everything behind again after an earthquake destroyed everything that they spent the last 11 years building, is just a major catastrophe. I am sure that the UN and other agencies will now work on expediting paperwork for whoever's in line to get here based on what had recently happened. So in that regard, we might see an influx, another wave, if you will, of people coming in. That's a big possibility. But until now, it's not very clear. But I would say, right now, the focus should be on the people that are internally displaced again in those regions.
Mm-hmm.
And maybe we can figure out how we can help out the refugees that do arrive after we start hearing more reports, because, as I said, it's not very clear right now.
Yeah. I wonder if personally you know of people who are thinking of leaving rather than staying through all of this in Syria.
Well, if it were up to the people inside Syria, of course they'd love to leave a horrible situation behind and try to rebuild in a country that they feel like would be more stable and in the long run can help them continue living a life that's of better quality in a country that they feel can help them do that. I do know, if you ask anyone on the ground, they would all love to be in a better place. Honestly, right now, I think most people are not thinking of anything besides survival. They're still homeless. So at the moment, if you talk to anyone right now, they're looking for loved ones. They're searching hospitals and they're searching under the rubble. There are people still standing outside of buildings looking for their loved ones. So at the moment, I don't think
that's where the focus is. Yeah.
Yeah.
Okay, Abdul Rahman Al-Dahan, it was really great to have you here, and we want to thank you, of course, for the work that you're doing to bring relief to people in Syria. Thanks for joining us.
Thank you so much. I appreciate it.
That's going to do it for us today. Come back tomorrow when we are going to unpack research into what makes A Good Life. We're going to talk with psychiatrist Robert Waldinger and psychologist Mark Schultz. This is 101.9 WDET FM, Detroit's NPR station, your connection to news, music, and conversation. Detroit Today is produced by Sam Corey and Nick Austin. Our technical director and engineer is Matthew Trevethan, and our student producer is Taylor Davis. Detroit Today's wonderful music is created by Sam Bobian and Will Sessions. We'll talk again tomorrow.